Name 148 in Vishnu Sahasranam is Anagha, which means no sin, sinless. Yeah, you can turn this off now, otherwise, yeah, everyone's going to be looking at that. There's any way that our mind can go away from anything beneficial from Krishna consciousness, the mind will tend to follow that. So, Krishna is described as without sin, sinless, which would seem to be obvious. Otherwise, why should we discuss so much about Krishna? If he's just an ordinary person who is subject to sinful reaction, then why should we discuss about Krishna? And that is what atheists and blasphemers will say. They will accuse Krishna of being sinful. And why should you worship such a person? They will say that we are misled. But there is no question of sin touching Krishna. What is the definition of sin? What is sin? Well, telling lies, cheating others, stealing, killing. These are all sins, no doubt. But the basic definition of sin is to act in a manner contrary to that desired by Krishna. He is the absolute entity. Everything is in relationship to Krishna. So that which is done, which is pleasing to Krishna, that is pious. Even if it is lying, stealing, killing, and you may say, well, how could that be? How could lying for Krishna be pleasing? How could stealing, killing, cheating? But that is because Krishna is absolute. It is not a negotiable principle. This is the meaning of absolute. To give a mundane example, there is a story, I don't know if it's true or not, but it serves the purpose. An anecdote of a Shah of Iran who visited France. A Shah, not we used to hear of the Shah until he got Dishad and an Ayatollah took over, but there were many Shahs before him. So there is a story of him visiting France and being shown all the sites that make La France, that makes it such a great country in the estimation of the French people. So one of the things he was shown was the guillotine, which was invented by Monsieur Guillotin for the purpose of very efficiently executing many people, one after the other. And the Shah had not heard of this before, and he thought, well, that's very interesting. See, it's very... He pulled the thing up, let it go. Next. And very efficient how the head rolls one way and the body goes this way and the blood is collected. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. Give me a demonstration. Said, well, we can't do that. Well, what do you mean you can't do it? Well, it's not, you just can't have a demonstration. Someone has to be sentenced to death on legal grounds, and then it's possible. You just can't do it. I mean, we could bring an animal, but you just can't have a human do it. Well, so the Shah said, well, if you don't want to give one of your men, I'll give one of my men. He said, well, we can't do that also. He said, you don't know what a king is. King means whatever he wants, has to be done. This is absolute. Of course, the Shah would have incurred sin by doing so, because he is king, he is absolute, as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even though the king within the state has absolute jurisdiction, but he has to always remember that his power is derived from the Supreme Absolute, Krishna, for the sake of serving him, and he is supposed to protect the citizens, not just use them for his own pleasure, which is why all the kings got kicked out, because or de-kinged. We have the king of, or it's the queen of the British Commonwealth, and we have the king or queen of Denmark, and few countries have kings. King of Thailand, Norway, I think Norway, Belgium, few countries have kings, but they don't have any political power, or extremely limited. But Krishna, he is absolute. And to such an extent that sin is defined in relation to him. Just like the king, if you please him, you're doing okay. If you displease him, you're in trouble. When there are real kings. So Krishna, what is done for his pleasure, that is the definition of piety. And what is not done for his pleasure, or what is done in forgetfulness of him, that is sin. That is the root definition of sin. So there are injunctions in scripture: do not steal, do not lie, do not cheat, and so on. These are injunctions. Scripture means that which is given by God of how to live in this world. But sometimes someone has to kill. You may say, well, that's not very nice. It's true, it's not very nice. But for some people in some situations, not to kill would be sinful. And that is what Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Just like some years ago, just to give one of many examples, some years ago at LAX, Los Angeles Airport, in the check-in line of the LAL airline, a gunman started shooting indiscriminately. He killed a few people, and then a security guard at the airport shot that gunman dead. So if that security guard in that situation had failed to take action, he would have been in breach of his duty. He might have been able to get away without killing him, but he certainly wasn't sentenced for killing that gunman. It was the right thing to do. He had to think on the spur of the moment what to do. He couldn't hold a conference, what should we do, while the man's shooting indiscriminately and just killing people. So sometimes the general law has to be broken, and it's not a sin for doing so. But the root definition of, so what is sin and what is not sin, we should understand. Generally we say sin means killing, stealing, lying, cheating, taking another man's wife, and so on. But sometimes one is required to do this, and it's not only sinful but proper to do such actions. But with Krishna, there's no question of whether what he does is sinful or not sinful, or at least there's no question for those who are in knowledge of the absolute truth, because everything that he does is proper. Now we may say, well, I don't like that. But you are not God. He is. And he makes the laws. Fortunately for us, he's not a wicked despot. He's a good ruler. Everything he does is for the ultimate welfare of everyone. And dharma, or proper action, this word dharma is variously translated, can be translated as religion or proper action. What is dharma? Dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma is that which is enunciated by him, that which is given in the scriptures. Dharma means to act according to his desire. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also calls Arjuna Anagha, is one of the names that Krishna refers to, addresses Arjuna as, which means that Arjuna, he is not expected to go against Krishna's desire for Arjuna. Arjuna thought he would be sinless by not fighting. But Krishna told Arjuna that you will be sinful by not fighting. So there are various reasons for that, which Krishna explained to Arjuna. But the root reason is that Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight. Krishna had a purpose for Arjuna to fight. So for Arjuna not to do so would have been sinful. So this is an extremely important point to understand, that we have to act according to Krishna's desire. Doing so is our proper activity. That is dharma. That is the complete understanding of dharma. To do otherwise, even to follow worldly dharma without a relationship to Krishna, that is not a proper understanding of dharma. Even if one is good, nice, polite, considerate of others, doesn't steal, doesn't lie, doesn't cheat, but is not a devotee of Krishna, then he's sinful. Not situated on the proper platform. And that's also why Savadhaman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. This injunction of Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna teaches to Arjuna, from the ultimate platform, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhaja. This is an external consideration. It's not an internal, totally spiritual consideration. Because if one is even thinking of following other dharma, if one even considers anything else to be dharma other than doing what Krishna wants, then one is not properly situated. Such a high platform Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us. Now, Krishna, he should be understood, is sinless. How is there any question of sin? Well, everyone in this world is sinful. Sava-rambha-hi-doshena, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in every activity in this world, there is some kind of fault. You can't act in a way, in this world it's not possible to act in a way that will not produce some harm, however much one tries to be harmless. For instance, in the Jain religion, the sadhus, they sweep in front of them as they walk, so they don't tread on any insect and kill it. But by sweeping, they might kill the insect also. Or they might sweep the insect away from the place where he was getting his food. Jains are very particular not to take potatoes, carrots, things grown under the ground, because they think you have to take them out of the earth. And in doing so, you'll disturb the worms and everything. See how particular they are. But they drive in cars and the oil comes from under the ground. So how can Or you may take the fruit from the tree, and by standing to pick the fruit, you may stand on an insect. Or you might, by eating, you could say, by eating the apple, you deprive some other living being who also wanted that apple. So the endeavor for perfection, it's impossible in this world. But there is one way, and that is to offer all one's activities for Krishna. And they become purified. If we do everything for the pleasure of Krishna, that becomes purified, because Krishna is all pure. Even though he comes into this world where there is sin, he remains untouched by that. Even though the very nature of this world is sinful, there's no sin in the spiritual world. But Krishna is not touched by that. Now, someone might protest. Oh, one other important point. Just by saying the name of Krishna, one becomes sinless. One becomes freed from all sinful reaction. And what question of sin is there in Krishna? But people will accuse, seeing Krishna's character. Krishna, he comes in this world. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many people can't imagine that, how God can come in this world as a person, because then he becomes just one of us. And that's exactly the point. He's so kind, he appears as if one of us. That is his great kindness. Even though he's so much superior, unlimitedly superior to us, but he moves in this world as if an ordinary person to, what does he do? Particularly to uplift his devotees, to give succor to his devotees, to please his devotees. That is the real reason for his coming. And Krishna himself says, I derive all my, people worship me to become pure, but I derive all my purity from my devotees. So in this way also, on Krishna's own admission, we could say that he's sinless because he worships his devotees. How pure is Krishna? People go to the Ganga for bathing, to get rid of sins. And even if the Ganga is full of pollution, human excrement, still the Ganga is pure. What is the purity of Ganga? Because the Ganga flows from Krishna's lotus feet. One becomes free from sin by bathing in the Ganga, because Ganga Mata flows from Krishna's lotus feet. And Lord Shiva is very happy to keep Ganga on his head because she flows from Krishna's lotus feet. This is the exalted position of Krishna. Yes, Krishna says, I'll read this verse. Mannimittam kritang papa api dharmasya kalpate. That if one, Krishna says, if one performs an activity that would normally be considered sinful, but if it's done for Krishna's sake, that is dharma. On the other hand, mam anadritya dharmopi papam syan mat prabhavataha. Because Krishna is Krishna, because of his influence. If one performs what appears to be dharma, but one has no respect or love for Krishna, then that becomes sinful. Yes, so Krishna is the standard by which there is sin or no sin. Sin means to act for Krishna, and sin means to act even not against Krishna, but just neglecting Krishna, which is against also. If you're not for him, you're against him. So then to come to Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Krishna says, activities performed for my sake, for my pleasure, even if they appear to be sinful, that becomes dharma. Now, a great example of this is Krishna's inducing Yudhishthira to tell Dronacharya that Ashvatthama is dead. Because before the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhishthira offered his respect to all his superiors in the opposing army, asked for their blessings, and asked them, how can I kill you? Because that's why they were lined up in battle. It's a curious culture in which one may respect someone and also try to kill them. That's because out of dharma, they're superiors to be respected, and out of dharma, in that situation, they were to be killed. Of course, Arjuna had a lot of problem with that. How can I kill my gurus? How can I attack them? So, when he came to Drona, Yudhishthira got the reply, I can only be killed if Ashwatthama is killed. Ashwatthama is his son. And he went to Ashwatthama and asked, how can you be killed? And Ashwatthama said, cannot. I'll be alive at the end of this. You're not going to kill me. And he's still alive. He's a Chiranjeevi, wandering around, still in the world, unseen. So it came that Drona was leading the Kaurava troops and making such devastation in the Pandava troops that the Pandavas, they thought, we have to kill Drona, otherwise we're finished. How can we kill him? We have to kill Ashwatthama. He can't be killed. So it's what to do. Then Krishna told Yudhishthira, you have to announce in the presence of Drona that Ashwatthama is dead. Because if Yudhishthira says it, only then will Drona believe it, because Yudhishthira is so honest and Drona fully trusts him never to tell a lie. Others, he wouldn't trust, especially Krishna, he wouldn't trust. Even Arjuna, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna said that, well, you know, you're from Mathura, and everyone knows Mathura people are liars and cheaters. So, what can we expect from you? But Yudhishthira was aghast. How can I lie? And how can I lie to Drona? And especially, how can I lie in so that he will become just completely, when he hears Ashwatthama is killed, then he'll lose all spirit and then we can kill him. Which is why Krishna wanted to tell this. So Krishna had a hard time inducing Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira, you have to do it, because Drona won't believe anyone else, because Yudhishthira never tells a lie. So Yudhishthira didn't want to do it. Then Krishna said, okay, look, there's an elephant in our forces called Ashwatthama. We'll kill that elephant. We kill the elephant. And that's Yudhishthira's, you see, he wanted not to tell a lie. But he ended up killing an elephant unnecessarily. I mean, there were thousands of elephants being killed left, right, and center. What to speak of humans in the battle, but one was unnecessarily killed. And then Krishna said, okay, we kill the elephant, Ashwatthama. So you can call out, Ashwatthama hata, Ashwatthama is dead. And then I'll blow the conch and you can say, Narova Kunjarova. Maybe either a human or an elephant. And in this way, you won't actually lie, but you will mislead Drona. And he will think, oh, Ashwatthama is dead, then I'm as good as dead. And it was effected. The death of Drona came about because of this. So, and after this, Yudhishthira's chariot, which, because he was so pious, his chariot would not exactly touch the ground, but it would float above the ground. After this, his chariot went down. Why? Because he lied, right? Everyone knows that. Because he misled Drona, right? You're all nodding. And no, because he hesitated to do what Krishna said. That is the reason. He should have done what Krishna said, even spoiling his so-called reputation. Because he did not want to do what Krishna said, he was more interested in his own reputation. Therefore, his chariot went down. Now, people will accuse Krishna that Krishna, you see, he had, the Pandavas were very pious, but Krishna induced them to act impiously. He induced Yudhishthira to tell a lie, or at least, if it wasn't exactly a lie, to mislead Drona so that Drona could be killed. Arjuna was very good. He didn't want to fight. He didn't want to fight against his gurus, but Krishna induced him to do so. Krishna ordered Arjuna to kill Karna in a situation which was against the rules of Kshatriya Dharma, in which Karna was protesting. Krishna slapped his thigh and reminded Bhim that this rascal, Duryodhana, he showed his thigh to Draupadi, and you should now break that thigh. Bhishma did it. That's against the rules of Kshatriya Dharma. So Krishna broke the rule in so many ways. Krishna, he dances with others' wives. He tricked the gopis into coming before him naked. He steals. He cheats. All this is Krishna's amogha lila. There's no sin in Krishna. To think that there is any sin in Krishna is sinful. People who criticize Krishna, they are sinful and they have to go to hell. Why? Because Krishna made the rules. That's all. You can't argue. You can argue if you want, but that's sinful. So this may defy all logic. You may say, well, Krishna is sinful. But there's no question of Krishna being sinful because he's above the rules. You may say, well, that's horrible. You see, he's doing so many bad things. Well, even from the secular point of view, what is bad? Bad is that which goes against the overall welfare of everyone. Some people are unrealistically idealistic, and they promote non-violence. That there should be under no situation should anyone be violent. This is this idea is actually it actually promotes sin. If we say we should be no one should do any violence under any circumstance, then this propaganda, this idealism will promote sin. Because if the Dallas police force says that now we're not going to do any violence to anyone, we're not going to shoot, we're not going to apprehend any criminal, or anyone can do whatever they like. The police, now we are all Buddhists and we're not going to do any violence to anyone under any circumstances. And all of a sudden you'll find the shops and houses are being looted, women are being raped, people are being killed, because those who should be violent have become non-violent. So the idea to be totally non-violent promotes violence, because violence is required to keep in check persons who are sinful. So dharma on the worldly level means to act in a way, or one of the major principles is to act in a way for the welfare of all, which doesn't mean that one should always be non-violent. It's a general principle is non-violence. but it's not an absolute principle. So Krishna lies, steals, cheats, kills, takes others' wives, but everything Krishna does, that has to be understood from the absolute perspective, just like Krishna takes others' wives. So that's wrong, isn't it? Well, it's wrong for anyone but Krishna, because actually everyone belongs to Krishna. So you may take others' wives, but actually they're Krishna's. And actually, if someone thinks, this is my wife, instead of thinking, this is a servant of Krishna, who I have to serve Krishna with, instead if someone thinks, this is my wife, who I am meant to enjoy, that person is sinful. Everyone and everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So Krishna acts in this world by his acting in a way that the Pandavas could win the Kurukshetra war. That was for the ultimate benefit of the world. Because if the Pandavas are in power, then they will rule in such a manner that people can become Krishna conscious. And by becoming Krishna conscious, people become free from birth and death. They go to Krishna in the spiritual world and live blissfully with him forever. So, Krishna always acts for the benefit of everyone. In that way, he's also sinless. One who always acts for the benefit of others, they are sinless. But one has to know what is the benefit of others. If one thinks that simply serving the body is for the benefit of others, or if one thinks one can benefit hungry people by feeding them something that is not Krishna prasadam, or if we feed them meat from a slaughterhouse, then in the name of helping others and doing good for them, we are being sinful ourselves and causing others to do sin. So, all these points should be understood very clearly. What about Arjuna inducing Drona to chop the thumb of Ekalavya? That's also, people think, well, that's very bad. You see, Arjuna, he's called Anaga by Krishna, sinless, but it seems he was envious of Ekalavya, who was a better archer than Arjuna. But Arjuna did that to uphold his guru's words that Drona had told Arjuna, you will be my best student. So Arjuna wanted to uphold that. And also, because Ekalavya, against the permission of Drona, had taken power from Drona so that he, Ekalavya, could become the best archer. So this improper system of discipleship, false discipleship, to punish that also, Ekalavya had to chop off his thumb. Even though he appeared to be an ideal disciple, he was not. So all these points have to be understood very carefully. By studying about Krishna, one can very easily come to the wrong conclusion, and in that way become more sinful. That way, that's why we have to hear about Krishna from his sinless, pure devotees who can guide us to properly understand Krishna. Then we become sinless by hearing about Krishna. Otherwise, we can actually become more sinful by hearing about Krishna and becoming offensive toward him, and thinking, oh, Krishna does so many bad things. And by becoming more inimical to Krishna, we actually become more sinful. So this is a most important point to understand, and we have to understand it in detail, how Krishna is sinless. Yeah, he kills, he steals, he lies, he cheats, apparently. But everything Krishna does is pure. So we should, this basic principle we should understand. And then we will not be misguided, misled, and we won't misunderstand. So that is a discussion of how Krishna is sinless. Krishna is free from all contamination of this world. There's no question of it, actually. If we understand who Krishna is, there can be no question of him being sinful, of even considering him to be sinful. But because some people do, therefore this name is, therefore Krishna, sinless, anaga. Is there any question about this? Yes, please. Controversial points, we may say.
If I went throughout the neighborhood stealing everyone's butter.
If you went throughout the neighborhood stealing everyone's butter, you'd be beaten and probably arrested. When Krishna does it, he's worshipped. That's the difference between you and Krishna. And not only that, if you went throughout the neighborhood stealing butter, it would be considered an odd thing to do in the modern age. You can even find butter. Not everyone has butter, do they? Why butter? It would be considered an odd thing to do. And you, if you want to get in the, at least in the local newspapers, you could do that. Usually minor crime doesn't get in the newspapers, but because it's odd in the modern age, you'd probably get in the newspapers. But it would be forgotten very quickly. Whereas Krishna, he was in this world last time about 5,000 years ago, and it's not forgotten at all. And people, devotees take delight in remembering it. So that again goes to show the difference between you and me and Krishna. Yeah, so what's your question? You wanted to hear that, yeah. I gave a whole lecture recently, I think earlier this year, on Krishna's, the implications of Krishna stealing butter. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Why, after the death of the Pandavas, Dhanaraj took Yudhisthira to heaven and he saw the Kauravas, Duryodhana, not his brothers.
Oh, you're going to start asking Mahabharat questions. Oh, then we have to sit here for many days. In brief, I can just say, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that, yeah, Yudhishthira saw the Kauravas in heaven and they said, well, you know, it's all over now, so we can all be friends here. And he said, well, forget it. I want to, where are my brothers? My wife, and so he had to go to hell to see them. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that this is an illusory pastime. That devotees, they never go to hell. They may appear to do so. But that was also demonstrated the principle of Yudhishthira's nobility, that he said, he was totally thrown out according to the pastime, that he believed in dharma. According to dharma, his brothers and wife should be in heaven, and the Kauravas, they might be in hell because they died on the battlefield, but if anyone should be in hell, they should be. But he said, I will stay in hell forever with my brothers and Draupadi, if to be. So that's, and then that was released. But actually this is an illusory pastime, because even though it's stated in Mahabharat that the Yudhishthira went to heaven, this should be understood. The popular recension or edition of Mahabharat that's popular in the world is meant for karmis. It's meant to induce people to live a pious life in material terms. Tri Shudra Dvija Bandhu Nam Traina Veda Gotra. Because people in Kali Yuga are of low class, so they can't very easily understand the essence of Shastra. But there is another edition of Mahabharata, Jaimini Mahabharata, most of which is lost, some is still there, which is a devotional edition. So we find, and we find also in Srimad Bhagavatam the story of the Pandavas, that they don't go to any mundane heaven. They're devotees of Krishna. What do they want to go to mundane heaven for? They go to Krishna. So these are various mysteries of Shastra that are explained by our acharyas. Hare Krishna.